I met Toby one time, you know, it was in 93, and he goes, so what do you do? I said, I think I want to write songs. And he goes, really? He goes, are you any good? I think so. I think I'm pretty good. He goes, I'm here all the time. He goes, if you ever got anything, just come by, just send me something.
We're back.
We are back.
Welcome
here we
back.
Are.
Thanks for joining us.
What a week.
So, Aldine, that was awesome.
That was incredible.
It was pretty cool, huh?
I mean, just talking about some of those old stories, it's like the first time hearing them for us sometimes.
I know.
Yeah. Well, and just having him here with us, and I didn't know any of those stories back, because you guys known him for 20, 25 years. That was fun for me hearing those.
I've never had the opportunity to sit down with him. As long as I've known him, I've never had that opportunity to sit down and talk to him like that and listen to those stories and hear from his perspective.
And it's easy to see, and we see it on a nightly basis on the road, but why his fan base relates to him. Because he's that guy that came in here, sat down, and was just talking. That was who he is.
And that's the same guy. He's been that way. I think you said this. He's been that way for 20 years. Exact same guy.
Yeah.
And we've been, as you guys probably picked up on, I mean, we're a family, right? We've been on the road 20 years, is that right?
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize this, but in those days, we were all on one bus together. You know, it's a 40-foot tube, and there's Jason, the band, and it's like probably a couple crew guys, right?
Yeah.
And we're out there 300 days a year.
There was a span from 04, probably to what, 2010? Where we didn't come home. We would leave. We'd play a show New Year's Eve. And we'd come back the next December 23rd, pretty much.
Ooh.
You know?
I've got to ask y'all this, though. Okay, when y'all were all on one bus, did anybody smoke on the bus?
Cigarettes?
Yes.
Great
cigarettes.
Well, you got to qualify.
Whatever.
He did smoke cigarettes, but he was always polite. He would go out the window and...
Go in the back, out the window. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think smoking was our vice.
No.
The crown.
Well, the reason I asked that.
We were way overdue for a Crown Royal sponsorship. I'm just throwing that out there. I mean, we had 60 empty purple bags on that bus.
Yeah.
The reason I asked that is because I come from a long line of singers. My dad was on the road for 40-something years. And I bet half the guys in that 12-man crew smoked, and they were all on one bus for that long, for that many years. And they didn't crack a window. They didn't do nothing. I mean, it was a smoke tube going down the road.
That kind of be your next song.
I
come from a long line of smokers.
Right. But I mean, it was a lot of time together, right? I mean, we spent, what you just say, 6 years probably straight on the road. And, I mean, we formed what is now, like, you know, people say road family, right? Well, I mean, this is, Tully is my family. Jason is my family. That's how much time we spent together every day. You know, I mean, you guys know this life. You get on a bus, you go to sleep, you wake up, you have your coffee, you go to sound check, you do the show, you get back on the bus. It's all day, every day. You're surrounded by these people.
And people ask you, they're always like, oh, it's so cool. You got to go to this town and that town. I'm like, let me tell you something. Here's how this goes. We go to bed at 3 and we wake up in the next town and the sun's going down in those days and we get up.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what town we were in. It was very similar every night.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't see any of the daylight or the sights.
That's so funny. You're right. People always ask, where's your favorite place to play? And you're like,
I don't know.
Just on stage.
I have no idea.
The red seats are kind of cool in that place.
Let me ask you this. So you get a schedule out on the road where you sleep a long time and you get up in time for sound check and whatnot. And then after the show, I know your adrenaline is still pumping.
Sure.
And it's like, so what time do you actually go to sleep after a show when you're on the road?
I don't get to sleep any time before 4 a.m. I'll get to my bunk before then, obviously, but I'll lay there wired up.
Yeah.
You know, And that's what the thing about the road is, which is no matter what you try to do, you always end up being a little tired. Don't you agree?
Does that carry over when you come back home and the tour's over and you get back home? Does that carry over?
These days, it's a lot tougher because we don't play as many shows as we used to. We play, probably 50 shows a year at this mm-hmm. point. So, your schedule is completely different. 6 months of the year, you're home. And, our work schedule, we get up at 6:30 in the morning, go to work. We come home, we're in bed at a decent hour.
Nice.
And all of a sudden.
You're starting to act your age.
All of a sudden, though, you get back on the road and
yep.
you're not getting ready for bed at 9:30. The show's starting at 9:30.
That's a fact.
So,
And some of those festivals that you do, when you go on last, some of them you don't go on until 10:30 or 11.
We're taking naps, bro.
That's where we're at.
These days. You're taking naps. No, but it was incredible to have him on here and
yep.
And talking about why the song connected with him, it's very obvious stuff for us. It's like the disrespect of the police, the smash and grabs, it's just like when he heard that song, he was like, who could not be against this? And we talked about that, on his episode. It was great for people to hear that. It's like, how could you not agree with some of that stuff we're saying?
Yeah, and from his perspective, because the first episode, we got to talk about how we wrote it and how we all got together and everything and why we're even doing this podcast. And then the second episode, getting him to Aldine to come. And actually, he was sitting, right here in this very chair that I'm sitting in now. But to hear his perspective and how the song hit him, where was he when he heard it? What did he think? And all the pressure he took, during that and standing up for it. And thank God for him for doing it.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think he was kind of, he didn't give himself enough credit. Obviously, he's not like that, but for the amount of, he took a lot of abuse in the media, undeserved, and to see him go out there every night and stand up for what he believes in was just talking about it now. It's like, I'll never get sick of talking about that.
He never apologized, not for one line of that mm-hmm. song. He never apologized to apologize for. No, there's not.
But seeing him out there, it really was, every night picking up someone's flag and slinging it over his shoulder. It's I'll never forget that last summer. That was definitely of all the years you've talked about it. How many years have we been out on the road? How many shows? Thousands of shows. We played Hicktown 150,000 times. We used to play that thing twice.
We used to play it twice and it was the only hit.
One thing that we didn't talk about that I wanted to talk about last week was, and we lost Toby Keith. And I meant to bring it up when Jason was here. Great American. And I don't know if what's talked about enough about Toby, we played in Oklahoma City. Kurt, was it end of October, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And our friend Brian O'Connell from Live Nation said, "Hey, I think Toby might come out tonight."
I remember this so vividly, and I'll let you keep going with this.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say when he did that, I think just as a courtesy call, whenever Brian or somebody he's with is in Oklahoma City, he kind of says, "Hey, Toby, we're in OKC. Come on out if you want." Toby never comes.
And Brian handled Toby's tour like he handles our tours for the nation. Yeah, just to.
And so he put in this call to Toby, and Toby says, "Yeah, maybe I'll come down and see Jason and the guys."
And he's really sick. This is end of October. Hmm. This past October.
Yeah.
And we, to be fair, I think me and Kurt said, "Man, how awesome would this be?" But knowing that Toby's not feeling great, we didn't really think that it would happen. And we Brian O'Connell told us that his son had a ball game that day. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, he's not going to drive down into the city.
Right.
And he's sick. And it's.
And apparently he avoids going to the arena there. Like that's just, it's his own place. He just doesn't want to do it. Right.
Yeah.
And so we're thinking, it'd be cool, but he's not.
Yeah.
And we're thinking, okay, if he does come, I think Brian or someone said, hey, one of us said, well, we play Should Have Been a Cowboy, which none of us has ever, we've never played this song together. Should Have Been a Cowboy. Great song. Mm-hmm. His first single.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, like, we didn't even run it at soundcheck.
Yeah. Because we thought the chances that it comes.
Right.
2%.
Right?
Yeah. And about, Kurt, help me out here. Was it, I know it was before, not that far from showtime. Maybe, was it 8 o'clock?
Oh, we didn't find out he was coming.
8:30?
Until we were in the middle of the show. Because we were wondering.
That's right.
And you guys know, if you wear ears, everybody does that now, right? And they get on the talkback mic. It was at least halfway through the show, and we're thinking, well, he's not coming. Toby is in the building.
In the building. And we, so back to be safe, we listened to Should Have Been a Cowboy in our green room, our little hangout room before the show, and we all listened to it and kind of played through the chords and, like, still thinking, this is, let's just make sure we are familiar with some of this. Well, halfway through the show, Toby's in the building, and Aldine introduces him in the, you can see it on YouTube, and it's a great introduction, and the roof blew off that place so loud. Unbelievable, the introduction Jason gave him. He walks up there, and you can tell he's not feeling well, and Toby talks, getting goosebumps, sorry guys, and we bust in the Should Have Been a Cowboy. And it felt so good. And Toby, I got to tell you, he sang his ass off.
He owned it, and you would never think anything other than, here he is, you know, mega superstar doing it. We do it. We figure he's leaving, right?
Yep.
Going to come up and sing, do his thing. Well, of course, he sits there and hangs out with us for, I don't know, an hour and a half after the show. By the way, I guess he told his wife he was going to pick up a hamburger. You know, and 3 hours later, he's still with us. But
told us some great stories, some Van Halen stories that are amazing. And we're just sitting there like, you know, and we go pretty far back with Toby. We met Toby in 03.
Mm-hmm.
But telling us stories, hanging out, and you could tell he just wanted to be around it. He wanted to be around what he loves, music. He wanted to be with the guys. He wanted to be, the fact that he got up there with Jason, it was amazing.
And I think he's always respected Jason because he probably sees a little of himself in Jason.
Yeah.
I was doing it his way, you know.
I was going to say that just on the side of, I can see why they have a connection, because I met Toby one time. You know, it was in '93, and there's a little hotel, and they had a bar real close to Music Row, close to where BMG is right now. You know that old, I forget what it's called, but anyway, I'd stopped in there and I'd heard that there was writers there, and I didn't have a deal or anything. I was going to go to Belmont University, so I just up there, you know, checking things out, and so I ended up talking to him at the bar. He was there, and he already had his first single out, you know, and he was there. I was like, why is he here? You know, for one thing, we started talking, and he goes, so what do you do? I said, well, I don't do anything. And he said, you don't do anything. I said, well, I'm going to school, you know. And he goes
to school.
He goes, well, yeah, I did for a minute. I went to a lot of schools actually, but he said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm gonna go to Belmont. He goes, well, what are you gonna study? I said, I guess I'm just gonna go study the music business. He goes, well, what do you want to do? He said, do you sing or something? And I said, not really. I said, I think I want to write songs. And he goes, really? He goes, you write. And I said, yeah. I write a little bit. And he goes, are you any good? And then I started getting really insecure. And I was like, well, maybe I think so. I think I am, you know. And before then, I thought I was this great writer. But as soon as somebody like that, who already is a hit writer and artist, asks you, you think, well, I think so. I think I'm pretty good. He goes, I'm here all the time. He goes, if you ever got anything, just come by, just send me something. You know, just come give it to me. you know? And to me, I just thought that was the biggest thing ever. I went back every night for 3 years, never saw him again. But no, I'm kidding. I didn't.
most artists wouldn't have said
but
that.
He wouldn't have said anything. But we're just having a beer together. And he was just asking me, and I was nobody, and he was way somebody. And the fact that he gave me the time of day and asked what I wanted to do, I just thought that was great.
You know, in his career, he had 42 top tens, 32 number ones, and this is what I love, 18 USO tours.
Well, yeah, that's the highlight of his career, right? According to him, it is.
He's played for over a quarter of a million troops in that time.
And, you know, Jason actually brought up this last week. He was talking about country songs that have kind of moved the needle in a way that ours did, and he mentioned Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue.
After 9/11. Yeah.
Right, after 9/11. And apparently he wrote that just to do on the USO tours.
Right. And it was not supposed to be a single, right?
No. It was just for the troops. Cool.
I didn't know that.
I guess the commander came up to him and said, you have to put this out. You have to do this for us. And he's like, all right, I'll do that. That's what happened.
And those tours, we've done some USO tours, DOD USO tours. Few things are more rewarding than doing those because they're so appreciative and they so need it. Toby did a lot of those. I don't know how many he's done in these places, but a lot of them were in conflict areas, like actual active behind enemy lines.
Yeah, and secret bases and all that.
Secret bases. Yeah. And we've done a couple of those. And, you know, it's not like it's an easy thing to do. I mean, you know, he did it right, though. He went and performed for the troops, the guys that really need it, that are putting their lives on the line, which, you know, I mean, really, it just says so much about Toby. It's amazing. And one of my favorite songs, Don't Let the Old Man In. So I heard it. Yeah. I mean, so how he wrote that for the Mule, for Eastwood, for the movie, right? So I guess I heard that Eastwood actually gave him the title for that in a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You guys hear this?
Yep. Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yep.
It was, I saw something Toby was talking about, and he mentioned that he was talking to Eastwood, and I think it is when Eastwood was turning 88. And by the way, Eastwood's 93 and directing a movie right now. I have a hard time getting out of bed in the morning, and Eastwood's directing a movie at 93. But I mean, I guess Eastwood's, or Toby said, how do you, you know, get up every day and, you know, you're 88 years old and doing this? And Eastwood's like, well, you know, I don't let the old man in. And what a story, what a song.
I know, it's such a good song.
I mean, it's when I hear that song, I'm like, wow, okay. You know, I've got a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, and we're talking about earlier, the Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. I mean, that was one of those things, as far as being a proud American and a uniter. I mean, Toby Keith was that. Jason Aldean is that, you know, and that song came, you know, just a couple years out of the worst tragedy ever, you know, to happen on American soil. You know?
I had heard that he had written that too. You know, there were a couple of other great songs that came out around 9/11. Alan Jackson.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Where were you? And what was the other one?
Daryl Worley.
Have you forgotten?
Yeah,
which rhymes with Bin Laden.
Yeah,
good song, right?
Exactly.
But anyway, I was going to say, and he apparently Toby loved those songs, but he was saying it was, you know, they were kind of sad, and of course the event was sad, but he was angry, which kind of, you know, goes back to how this was, our song was born, but he was just angry and he needed to get that across. So
yeah, and it's funny too because in the actual title of it. It says Toby Keith, Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue, in parentheses, the angry American.
Right.
And it just spoke to me so much. I just grinned when I saw that. I thought, you're kidding us, because that's the same place we were, because you're angry about stuff that's happening in the country that we love.
Right.
You know, and so then you write something about what you believe, and you have an artist like Aldean that stands up for it, takes all the bullets for it to get the message out there. You find out there's millions of people that think the exact same way. But it also, you know, the song was revealed to us, but it what was also revealed is what is happening in America. You know, is revealing to me how much dissension that there is, and that we're more divided than ever, I think. I mean, I don't know of another time in my life that we're, you know, I mean, it's 50-50. This group over here thinks this group over here thinks this, and there's no one, there's not a uniter currently bringing us together.
I heard Tully say this last week. He was like, how can we have been so united at that time and then come to this? And it's just, it's when you sit back and think about that, yeah, it's crazy, because we were everybody was pulling together whatever we needed to do, and somehow it splintered.
And it bums me out.
Yeah.
It bums me out because it's, I don't know how we can be so together at a time of tragedy like that. And it's like every time 9/11 comes around the anniversary of every year, I can definitely feel people forgetting about it. I don't want to think that, but I feel like that, whether I'm wrong or I'm right. I just feel like people have forgotten.
Yeah.
What can happen. And when I see someone burning a flag, that does piss me off.
Yeah.
That does absolutely piss me off. And I don't know how there's any positivity in that. Whether you're trying to prove a point one side or the other, I don't see how that is a way to convey any kind of point. People have, in my opinion, have forgotten how to respect the flag, respect the military. And to come back to Toby for a second, like, that's what he was doing. He was giving back to the military. This freedom is not free.
Yeah.
I feel like we've definitely have lost.
And that wasn't political with Toby either. You know what I mean? He wasn't a hardline conservative. I think I heard him say he labeled himself a conservative Democrat. You know, he was like in the middle, which a lot of people are.
Yeah. I feel like people in the middle don't feel like they have middle ground anymore. Well, Caleb just said it.
Right.
It's one way or the other. And really, Toby, well, you said it, Kurt. You said it great. Giving back to the troops, giving back to those who are putting their ass on the line. You know what I mean?
And you have, just for so many years, men and women who have died for the right for somebody to stomp on a flag or burn a flag. You know,
I'll never understand that.
I just don't get it. Just the privilege that we have. Yeah. And it's the greatest country in the world. And it just irritates us. So, and that's why we're doing this. You know, that's why we got people out there listening that are just like us. And thankfully we have Toby Keith and Jason Aldean and other artists like that to stand up and,
do you guys remember where you message? Were? I know we were together.
I know where I was. Where you were? Neil, where were you?
When
the world stopped turning. Alan Jackson.
on 9/11? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was in our house in Cool Springs getting ready to go play a golf tournament to raise money. And I can't remember what the foundation was for, but it was a Diamond Rio golf tournament. And I was getting ready to walk out the door, and I was in our bedroom standing in front of the TV getting ready to leave, and I saw it unfolding and watched it all live. And I remember having to call somebody that was a representative of Diamond Rio and ask them if the tournament was still going on. And the guys in Diamond Rio said, yes, this tournament's going on. We're not going to let what happened today stop our purpose and what we're supposed to be doing and raising money for this foundation, because that's exactly the reason that they did it, was to get people to stop doing what they're doing in America, all the good that everybody wanted to do. So that we went and played in the golf tournament and had a moment of silence, and it was a really moving thing. I'm glad they did the tournament that day, but I remember exactly where I was when that happened.
I think it was just a shock. I didn't know how to process it, and maybe the same even with the people in that tournament committee. You don't fully process what's happening, at all. As Kurt was asking, I was at Alpine Bagel in Brentwood, where you guys live, and I had just come from a Bible study, with some guys just talking about family stuff and God, and all that, and you're just watching on this little TV and trying to process that, which you couldn't. It's like, okay, what do we do? I mean, do we, obviously you go home, you know, but it was just.
Yeah, I remember wanting to go pick up the kids at school, bring everybody home because we didn't know what was coming next.
Yeah, and you're wondering, is
the whole country under attack? And yeah. It was a scary time. I remember it well.
Yeah. What about you guys? Where were you?
We were on our way to a session.
Well, we got to the session.
We got to the session. This is when Tully, Rich, and I lived together.
Castle Door. We were going to Castle Door.
Okay.
Yeah. Recording studio. Yeah.
And I think as we were leaving to go to the session, the first tower might have been hit. And at that time, they didn't know.
We didn't know if it was.
We didn't know what it was.
What was going on? Like, did a commercial plane? Did something happen? And we got to the session. We were playing the session.
Yep.
Recording it. And this, I don't remember who this was on the session, who we were doing it for, some writer. And we were watching on the TV there. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were all sitting there and watching this happen. And we're like, we're out of here. And the writer goes, oh, no, we got 5 songs to get today. I said, right. I think Kurt or me, I remember Russ Paul was on the session. Mm-hmm. And I remember Russ Paul, I think we were all in agreement, like, we played our last note right now.
I forgot about Russ, you're right.
You know, I think we were it's such a confusing thing.
And
you know,
yeah,
so
and
scary.
After that, I mean, probably like you guys, you're glued to the TV for, I don't even know how long.
Oh,
it
yeah.
was a week or a month. You're just like glued, like you're getting information.
What's next?
What's next?
Yeah, and the unknown was scary.
People band together and you get that feeling of America uniting.
Yeah.
And
it was so united.
It was so united.
It was sure.
And you talk about
there wasn't anybody burning the flag that day, I can tell you.
No.
No, they were raising the flag that day.
That's a fact.
And you know, you talk about these amazing people. 343 firefighters and paramedics died that day. 23 NYPD officers and 37 Port Authority officers all died going in to save people. And when you think about the police and you think it's like the lack of respect you see towards them and towards the flag, it's just like, it's gut wrenching to me. Like you don't have to be, on, doesn't matter what side you're on politically, to have the common ground and respect of the country and the flag.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't understand.
I can't imagine, Kalo, the day you were walking and you saw that footage, which spawned the idea of try that in a small town. I can't imagine, you know, after going through something like 9/11 and some of the other things that happened after that, how anybody could do the things like burn a flag and defund the police, you know, be mad at the cop or whatever it is.
Yeah,
I can't imagine the anger you felt walking that day. Coming up with that title. We're all thankful that you did, by the way.
No, I'm thankful too to the Lord for giving it to me, and as my wife would say, in my fit of rage.
But just honest with you about this, like, I don't think the Lord could have given that to a better person.
Well, thank you.
Amen.
Kelly.
Because I think what you did with the gift of it, like the way it came to you and what you've done with it. We're sitting here now talking about things. Look what Jason did. Look what the song, what came to be and what the movement that it became, you know, it all brought us here, which is, you know, there are no accidents like that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
Even though you were wearing tights.
I wasn't wearing tights.
And you can debate
go back and listen to episode 1, please, to know that it was a prayer walk, not a power walk. Okay?
But you still, please. They're compression pants.
Please, they were not. That's good for circulation. Okay? That's very healthy. But you know, as Neil, you're talking about that, you know, but it's about the flag and about the defunding the police and all that. I mean, it's what's even more, you know, infuriating and frustrating and painful and heartbreaking is that it's getting worse. and it's getting worse especially in the cities. And it's not, you're just disrespecting the police.
See, I don't understand. I don't get breaking us down like this, because it's not like
everything that happens is igniting the division in this country. We have 75,000 plus homeless vets.
Yeah.
Well, that's
and they're giving money and feeding and housing. There's over 75,000 homeless vets in this country, and they're feeding and housing illegal immigrants. I'm not saying there's anything bad about these people that want to come to a free country like this. That's who wouldn't want to come here.
Sure.
But when they get taken care of before that many homeless vets, I got a big problem.
Oh, it goes back to my. I hate that I feel this way. It bothers me, but I feel like there's no respect for military. I think I shouldn't say there's no respect. I just think there's a lack of respect from people. You know, my grandfather, all of our family, my grandfather was a World War II veteran.
My granddad, World War II, uncle in Vietnam.
My dad was in the Navy. My uncle was in the Navy. My wife's grandfather was a pilot in World War II, you know, dogfights and landing aircraft carriers and crazy stuff. And it's like that whole the pride in this country, like that generation, our greatest generation, you know, think about what they endured for our freedom. And it's we have lost that.
We've lost that, and that's for sure. And it bleeding over into law enforcement now. You have cops that don't want to be cops anymore because of the lack of respect.
Like, and they can't do their job.
No. And like in Austin where, you know, whatever it was like $150 million they took away from there. And they had 40 police officers retire in that year because they're like, we're not going to do this. You know, there's so much lack of respect. And I've got extended family in law enforcement. One of my best friends and growing up, his dad was a cop. We thought that was amazing, right? It's like, your old man's a cop. That's so much, that's cool. That's so much honor. My friend, he was a cop his whole life. He just retired. His brother was a cop. His two sons are cops. There was so much pride that they had, but it's hard for those guys to do that now. You know, they should be giving more resources to the police to be able to deal with what's happening as opposed to taking the money.
It'd be cool to take this, you know, if we're fortunate enough to take this podcast on the road, I would do writer's rounds and raise money for vets in hometown and small towns you know, first responders. It'd be such a rewarding thing to do, to go sing for those people and raise money for those guys.
On our scale with this song, even on tour last year, a lot of places we go are connected to the like Wounded Warriors, you know, foundation, and we'd see them in the backstage and people there, and they'd say thank you, and the local cops on hand that night would say thank you. And it's like, you know what, you know, whatever small part we can play in us saying thank you for doing a thankless job.
It's a thankless job.
You know, and I don't, again, look, we've had, I remember me and Aldine were driving to Macon, Georgia in 1999 from, you know, Nashville. And we got in my old truck. We look like crap, you know, we're going to, you know, Macon and we had my truck loaded up with gear and everything you can imagine. And we leave town. We got like 25 minutes out of town down near Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And we're rolling. We got a crappy radio on and all of a sudden the lights come on. And I don't think I was speeding. Maybe, I don't know. I don't think that truck could go fast enough to speed, but we get pulled over. We get pulled over and we got pulled over. I would have pulled us over too. So I get pulled over and he comes to the truck and we look like crap. I mean, we probably,
out of the car long
hair.
Out
of the car. Yeah. Exactly right. So he gets me out of the car, gets Aldine out of the car. And I can't remember which one of us, I think it was, they might've put Jason in the car and I was sitting on the road and
I'd love to have video of that.
Well, he emptied out my whole truck, convinced that we were probably had some drugs with us, or we were up to no good, which, you know, to be fair, we probably looked like that, to be fair. But you know what I didn't do? or he didn't do was like run from the cop.
You didn't resist.
Try to hit the cop. Like, he's got a job to do. It sucked. He emptied out all my stuff and all the gear, and there was a sad scene out there on, you know, the interstate. But
all your tidy whities. Embarrassing. I get it.
It's totally embarrassing. No, but
the guitar in the back seat saved you, didn't it? It saved you, didn't it?
No, that, I don't know if it saved me. I think he's probably convinced that he did us a favor and let us go. But we all have those stories. Like, we've all been pulled over when, you know, whatever, you know, but I remember I've never not respected the police. I mean, it's bad things can happen if you do something stupid and you try to run or drive away or
what those guys have to put up with. I can't even imagine.
It's a ridiculously hard job. They're making life and death decisions in a split second.
And they're afraid to make those decisions because
imagine walking up to a window of somebody you don't know. You've pulled over on the side of the road. It's, you know, you're walking up to the window and you don't know what you're walking into. You don't have a clue.
So much training that goes involved. You know, those guys, that's years of training to do it. Now what's happening, they're getting flooded with new people. And it's, man, as you're seeing with some of these cities that are defunded, obviously the crime rate has gone up. I mean, that's no big surprise.
Right? I heard in New York City, I heard this today.
I know.
National Guard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is in the subways.
A thousand have been deployed.
I mean, just think about
with that. Weapons.
That's come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
but they'll tell you the crime rate has gone down.
But if you live there, I'd be thinking, well, thank God.
Compared to what?
Thank God. I know somebody's down there.
Has there ever been? You know, has there ever been a National Guard instructed to go to a small town? Has that ever happened in the history of America? I'd love to know that.
Maybe for some, I don't know, but not for civil unrest.
I'm just saying have they ever needed? Has it ever been so bad that they needed the National Guard at a small town, or did the good old boys just take care of it?
Caller, we're going to get back to you on that one. We don't know 100%.
Hey, I'm just saying.
But it just leads us
back to our song.
But no, but the point you're making, is great. And that's, small towns. It's really what I feel like America used to be as a whole, you know, that now a lot of it has boiled down to small towns because they're smaller communities actually know each other's names and they watch out for each other. And now everybody is so just disconnected, that it's almost, there's just an apathy. It just seems, you know, and which is a shame, you know, it just is.
Yeah, it's definitely.
I think we should make a toast to you for coming up with the title of the song and raise one for Toby.
We should have actually raised
one for
Toby.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, let's do that.
Hey, Wade. One for the red, white, and blue.
Oh, red solo cup.
And he's in a red solo cup.
Cool story about this cup. So, couple years ago, we were at the BMI Awards in 2022, this year. BMI Cup, Red Solo Cup. Toby was the icon, give him the icon award.
Mm-hmm.
You were there.
I remember.
Got up there. Great speech. And you knew that he was telling his life. He knew what he was doing, how much this town meant to him, how much the songwriters meant to him. Everybody in that room. So here's to a great American.
Yeah, absolutely.
Toby Keith.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
To the rest of the
man.
Indeed.
Who poured that shot?
Wade.
That was Wade.
God dang, Wade.
That was Hey Wade.
How about running that over some mice next time?
Ooh, good God.
Dang, goodness. Wade.
All right. So, guys, just in talking about the border, I mean, that to me is, and I know it's a hot button, not for everybody, but the fact that you have so many millions of people coming from so many different countries. I don't even know, Kurt, you probably know how many countries. I don't know how many countries, but they're coming from some countries that don't love America already. And we talked about 9/11 earlier. You think about it really a brilliant plan for years that was planned to create 9/11 from the people that wanted to devastate us, hurt us, destroy us, kill us. You don't think they've been thinking since then? You don't think that they're already sending people
the
here?
The unknown is what's scary.
Yeah, they're coming from everywhere. So it's not like you have people from Mexico coming over because they don't have enough work and they're coming over, you know, for work and money. Now some people are, right? But out of 7 million, you said 10, Kurt, right? Yeah. Out of that many people, somebody means us harm. No two ways about it, because it's already happened. It's already happened. They're already killing. They killed that girl, that Georgia student.
It's heartbreaking, and you kind of alluded to this. What I don't get, and you said this, you can have an illegal that gets arrested, and 48 hours later, they get let go.
Because they only shoplifted, so that you can't hold them for that.
Right.
Then they kill somebody.
Yeah. And I mean, and you know what? If you have an illegal that commits a crime and you don't deport them, what is that? Like, I don't get that. Somebody explain that to me.
What? If
they're criminals.
Well, Tully, if you stole something, if you stole a 12-pack of beer tonight on the way home, like...
In front of everybody.
I know you'll pay for it, but if you were to steal it, you would be in jail.
Absolutely.
And you'd be in jail tomorrow.
Here's my issue with the border. And my ancestry came from Ireland. You know, landed in New York City, you know.
America was built on immigration. We know this.
Agreed,
yes. That is the fact. But it's a different time. Post 9/11, the border is now a way to get in and hurt us if you want to. A lot of those people just want to be here. I get that. But we can't be that naive to just assume that nobody wants to come and hurt us. And it feels, again, it feels like we're being set up for failure. Like, am I forgetting this or did this happen? For 3 years, wasn't Biden, the administration, saying, oh, there is no problem at the border?
Yes.
The border is secure, even though we're watching this. But now, all of a sudden, there's a problem at the border.
Well, why.
Yes. Yeah. But it's
the election is coming soon. So let's fix the things or make it look like I care about these things because I want to get reelected. So now I care.
Well, they expected the border towns to absorb the influx.
Oh, the sanctuary cities.
They don't want them, just the border towns.
You just said it, Kalo.
Right.
You said it.
They just wanted to decimate these border towns. And funny, we were on the road, a couple years ago, and near a border town, and one of the guys that was running us back and forth to where we needed to be was actually a police officer. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that they are just getting destroyed. And this is before it became where all the media started covering it, right? But that's what they wanted. They wanted the border towns to absorb this, and it just crushed them. And you said the word sanctuary cities. Okay, well, you see what happens then.
Yeah.
They don't want them. And it's I don't know how, maybe you guys can help me figure this out. How do we get out of this? There's so many. What's the number, Kurt? You had said the number.
Well, yeah, it's up near 10 million.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Go ahead.
No, Kurt. No, you go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it's disturbing because, like I said, that's as many that has been 18 years prior to that combined.
That's more than the population of 34 states, 10 million people.
Right?
34 states in our country. That's more than the population of 34.
Newborn in America, it's about 3.5 million a year. So it's equal to that. And they're flooding them into these states. And
it's all about retaining power for the left. That's all it's about. Well, that's all it's about.
I gotta tell you, I can't imagine. It's a terrible thought, but I have two kids. And it's hard. It's scary enough. There's a scary enough world out there. You know, things can happen, but the feeling of like if something happens to one of your children, by someone who's illegally here, who has a record of violence, and we didn't do any vetting. We didn't do any. That is unrecoverable. I don't know. I don't know how to even react to that.
Yeah.
And well, have you noticed that the states that are reacting to it constitutional carry now is, you know, it's, you don't have to have a permit. And I don't know how many states have passed it now, but you don't have to have a carry permit to carry a firearm, a handgun. And while all that's going on, that's going on over here, which shows that shows where the division is. You got people that are taking, you got sanctuary cities that are paying the price now that they're all coming in. And then you got states over here that are enacting constitutional carry. And I don't know where it's going to end.
So do you?
It doesn't look good, but I don't know where it's all going to come to a head at some point.
Do you guys think?
Because most people are going to protect their own.
Do you guys think the population is actually divided on this issue? How can it? Do you guys?
Okay, that's a great question.
How can that be? Like, do you think that?
On this
subject, immigrate, like what's happening at the border.
Okay.
And what's happening now to the cities and in these, you know, unfortunate situations where someone gets murdered. Are there people saying, oh, no, I like this.
I don't think there's people saying I like this, but it's funny you ask because I think you would think that we're all on the same page with this, but I know there are people that think differently on this. And it's, I don't understand where that's coming from. I don't. You know, if they're just watching a different.
But those same people, if you were to bring 20 Venezuelans to their doorstep and say these people need a place to stay, they're going to turn them away. They're a bunch of liars.
I don't disagree with
them. They are not going to take them in. They're all talk. They want to sound that way. And it's, if you were to drop them off at their front door and say these people need a shower, they need food, and they need a place to stay, they would turn them away.
Well, you're right. And then if you zoom out a little bit, it's like we kind of turn the other way on this because we think, oh, it's down there, it's on the border, whatever, it's affecting different cities. When it affects you in your hometown, and like you said, if it affects your family, you're going to think a lot differently.
It just shows you how much Biden cares about his own people, the citizens of this country. It shows you how much he cares about them by letting somebody that nobody knows crawl through a fence, climb over a wall, and walk through somebody's homestead.
Wearing a Biden-Harris T-shirt.
Exactly. It shows you how much he cares about his own people.
Well, they love Biden. And they know, you know, and we're seeing pictures of it and these people getting arrested and stuff. You know, they're gang members, you know, and I think what scares me is the fact that how could we be okay with it? How could we be naive enough to think, oh, they don't mean us any harm? Of course they mean us harm. Not all of them, you know, and that's the shame of it. Like we've just lost the process of becoming a citizen, you know, which a lot of people spent years doing the correct way. And it's amazing if you think about it, what this country is. That's why this country is great. The same thing that made it great is now tearing it apart, which is crazy to think.
Which is every known, anyone that's ever ruled the world, it all falls apart from within. And not saying it's going to happen tomorrow, it could be 1,000 years, but it's not a good feel right now for sure. And I think the current administration, they think, okay, let's just love everybody and just bring everybody in because we love them and give them things. They'll be nice. Well, and to your point, Tully,
they don't really think that. They don't really think that. No, they know. They know what they're doing.
We can sometimes, you can be in your bubble, in your community, your neighborhood, and you can think everybody's wired the same. Everybody is not wired the same.
Yeah.
They're not. There's not an amount of love you can give them or money you can give them to make them be like you and feel like you and love like you, it's impossible. They're not going
to
do it.
Some I want everybody to feel like
want
me.
To do harm. They just do. So I just want to know who's coming over. That's all.
We just want to know what is there an issue of violence? Is there, have you have passed? Have you been arrested for violent crime?
And what's interesting is because it's an election year, right? So we've been, you know, 3 years, okay, not visiting the border. And I think VP, she is in charge.
Kamala Harris.
Right? Kamala Harris.
She's
in charge.
The czar.
And just bless her heart. She just doesn't say things that resonate with it. It's difficult. You could say it nicer. But,
I can't.
Gosh,
no, you can't. Yeah. I can't. Sorry, I can't. It's a freaking joke.
But anyway, getting back on the point, you know, is the fact that 3 years now Biden is going to the border. Now he only goes
very slowly
on slow days. Now we've learned that Mondays are slow, just like with Aldi and you guys don't do shows on Monday nights, right? You know why? Because everybody's working and eating their dinner and stuff. They're not going downtown. They're not going to a Coliseum or anything like that. No. They're going to, you know, they go when there's no traffic, you know, and then Trump goes too. He goes where there's traffic. Biden goes where there's no traffic. You know, it's all political. They do not care. They don't care who's coming over. They don't.
They don't. That's a fact. That's a fact.
At its most basic.
Or point, under.
Whatever.
They don't care.
Whatever side you're on, you have to see something. What you're saying, like you said it very well. I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense not to make sure who's coming over. Isn't an obvious threat.
Doesn't and it? Then when they present the threat, they show that they will be a threat. You don't do anything about
we
it.
We don't.
It's like it's one conversation to let the illegals.
That
over,
should be all that needs to be said.
A threat or a criminal,
enough said.
And we don't do anything.
Enough unsaid.
That hurts.
Yes.
We kind of believe America currently is here to help Israel survive. Israel is very, very important. Very, very important. And God knows this, none of this is a surprise to God.
No, it's
right?
not. It's all biblical.
And he also, he knows who the next leader is going to be. He's not saying, oh no, it's Trump. He says terrible things. He's not surprised. Right. So he is in control. And that's the thing that does give us peace at night. So we're not, even though we get on a topic and we get passionate and angry and you care about people and you don't like people getting hurt. I mean, to me, you know, God's on the throne. He is going to take care of stuff, but it doesn't mean we don't pray. Doesn't mean that we don't do things. Doesn't mean we don't help each other, you know, because that's what we're here for.
And it doesn't mean that there's not still some good acts and some good things being done in the world. And Kalo, you were just talking about Braylon Edwards, right?
NFL guy. Hey Wade, sent us a story this week, which
so
is great.
Tell us the story, which is it kind of pertains to the song, and it kind of gives us some hope and speaks to what we're trying to say here.
Yeah, he just said that's a great point. I mean, because there are a lot of positive things, you know, happening, and just like we're talking about in the small towns, people helping each other. It was so cool that NFL player. He was at a YMCA. You know, he's working out. And he just in the locker room and everything, and he heard something, and the first thought he goes that music's really loud back there, and he just thought that, and then he was just aware, right? And then he heard a thud, and when he heard a thud, he said, "All right, that's not right." So he went back there, and there was a 25-year-old guy beating up an 80-year-old man in a YMCA locker room, right? So he goes back and he grabs the back of his hair and says, "I subdued the young man."
I subdued.
So, which I loved.
That's the epitome of our song too. It's so good.
But I absolutely love.
Exactly.
I absolutely love that. And then it gets down to the point and to everything that we're talking about and thinking about. And it's like they're asking him, says, "So why did you do that? You know, why'd you put yourself in risk and do that?" And his quote was said, "At the end of the day, it's just what you do.
It's just what you do." And it wasn't like a big thing. He didn't make a big thing of it. These are basic values, right?
Like
it's the same thing. It's the same mindset that those cops had running into the towers that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Firefighters, everything.
It's just what you do.
Exactly. It's just what you do.
Exactly.
Well,
it's just what you do.
Amen.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, those are the kind of messages that we're trying to spread.
I mean, could be a title of a new song too. So anybody out there listening, thinking you're going to write, it's just what you do.
Cut. Hey Wade.
No.
Hey Wade.
Stay tuned for that one because that's a fantastic title.
Hey guys. That is the overall spirit of what we're talking about, right?
Absolutely.
That feeling. What we started this conversation with tonight is how we'll end it. It's like feeling that united. You know, and that
just
is
just helping your neighbor.
It's just what you do.
You see something wrong going on,
you see something going on, you help out. That's the small town mentality.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just what you do.
Help out your neighbor.
All right, y'all.
One more.
Cheers, boys.
Here we go.
Love y'all.